As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Drancer, it's a game night, but we just couldn't stay away. Yeah, the Canucks are going back-to-back, but we have got the boy genius, Harmon Dial, on with us a little bit later on in this episode of the VanCast. He'll talk to us about the data behind the last Canucks six games, whether it's sustainable, what he's seen in practice. And we've also got the World Juniors. We don't know how long the World Juniors is going to last. They have had a couple of games. Canada's played a couple of games. But like everything else in the hockey world, it's fluid. We don't know where it's going to take us. And the NHL has a new protocol around COVID and what teams on both sides of the border are going to see. Should be a fun episode here.
Yeah, I mean, let's yada yada the COVID stuff as quickly as possible. The Canucks are back. They're going to play on Wednesday night. Let's go. I'm really curious to see if they play an American opponent in Rogers Arena for a while. My guess is they won't, at least until there's some sort of accommodation, some sort of understanding about how exactly cross-border issues, a variety of them, are going to function and what Canadian public officials will permit. You know, we're now in a world where COVID protocol applies to 25 teams differently from how it applies to the Canucks, who have a 7-day, like their jurisdiction will require 7 days in isolation for positive tests and then 10 days for the rest of Canada. You know, so six teams being governed by that. I mean, we're truly through the looking glass in terms of a patchwork of protocols and competitive advantages that are accrued, therefore. Whatever. The Canucks are back. They're going to play. They're going to try and win their seventh in a row under Bruce Boudreau. Do you know, the Canucks haven't lost since December 4th. It's been 25 days since Vancouver Canucks fans experienced defeat. I suspect they're not going to do so tonight against a Ducks team that looks like they may be a bit diminished because of COVID. Can the Boudreau train keep rolling, Farhan?
Well, that's a great question. And real quick, we do want to just let people know that the protocol for the NHL has changed. We're not going to debate the rights and wrongs of it, but now players, based on what you've seen in the NFL and the Center for Disease Control in the States, after a positive test, you've got to isolate for only 5 days, which is different than what it was before. And that changes if you're asymptomatic or not. Vaccinations do apply, but every NHL player other than Bertuzzi is vaccinated, so that part of it doesn't necessarily matter. And you mentioned the Ducks are going to be dealing with it. The Canucks aren't, right? Which is a surprise. Usually you expect the Canadian team, you know, to deal with it more just because of more restrictive regulations, but everybody's out, including Alex Chiasson. So the Canucks have a full complement, at least as far as COVID is concerned. Yeah, there's players like Travis Hamonic and others that are still dealing with some form of injury, but The Canucks have had a couple of practices. They're feeling great about what they are. They're in Anaheim, and they've got these back-to-back games in Southern California. So just a lot to be optimistic about beyond just what you're hearing from Bruce Boudreau on his shout-outs to fans.
Yeah, beyond Bruce Boudreau's killer cameos. Well, yeah, I mean, if the Canucks can sweep this road trip, right, which would have been a big ask a month and a half ago, but feels like inevitable now, right?
Wow, think about what you just said.
Of course it's not. Of course it's not, but feels inevitable now. They'll have gone a month without a loss.
Wow.
They'll need to win three more games.
Yeah, it's incredible. Yeah, back-to-back games in Southern California before coming back to the Northwest to play in Seattle on Saturday, and then 3 days off before they're supposed to host the New York Islanders on Wednesday the 5th, and then Ottawa comes to town on the 8th. So that game on the 5th is going to be interesting, right, because a lot has to happen in terms of just decisions being made from a Canadian government standpoint to make sure that happens. But as far as these games against Anaheim and LA and where both teams were trending heading into the break, you've got to love the Canucks' chances, you know, and look, we're going to have a lot more to talk about tomorrow. We're not going to do our next VanCast until next week, but, you know, the Canucks are in a pretty good place right now.
Yeah, they're, I mean, much better than they were in to open the month of December, to open the final month of the year. And we'll see if the good times can keep rolling. But they've got a shot at a shot. We have no idea what the season is going to look like. They were rolling and that was interrupted. And I suspect that that's not ideal, but who knows? Like, they also got in more practice time than most other teams around the league during this pause. And with a new coach, with new systems, maybe that helps. It'll be interesting.
That's my big question, is just that, what plays the bigger hand? Rust, rest, momentum, practice time, systems installment? You know, we're going to find out quickly, but as you're looking at it all from a historical context, not that anybody's got history around COVID, but just in terms of breaks, you know, we've seen, I mean, heck, even the Canucks last year coming out of the COVID break, one, they didn't look good doing it, but they wound up winning, you know, just based on pure adrenaline and emotion. But, you know, when you look at this team, I tend to think just having the ability to really understand what Bruce Boudreau is looking for and to fine tune some of what we saw over those six games, I think this is going to prove to the Canucks' benefit. They're going to lose somewhere along the way. They always were going to lose somewhere along the way. But I'd be surprised if the Canucks don't win two of these three.
Yeah, I mean, these are teams you got to beat. All divisional opponents, all teams that you need to pass, like all teams that you should fancy yourself as being better than. I don't know that they are, but, you know, they should believe they are. Certainly entering this season, I think we thought LA, Seattle, and Anaheim were at best Vancouver's, or sorry, were at worst Vancouver's peers, right? And we thought Vancouver would probably be, or at least have a good shot of being a little bit better than them. Hasn't played out that way, at least with the exception of Seattle. But you know, Vancouver's got a chance here. And they've got a chance to keep this run going, go to 10-0, as Boudreau declared would be better than 6-0, quite correctly, in fact. Literally true in that cameo that he did for those fans over Christmas. And, you know, you do that, you've really got a shot at a shot, which, boy, I didn't think they would have when they were at 1% chances, according to Dom's odds. That was just like 2.5 weeks ago.
Or at least 24 days ago. Meanwhile, yeah. The Ducks, look, going into the break, I mean, they were in pretty good shape. They were currently 10 points ahead of the Canucks. Canucks just have the one game in hand. Anaheim with 40 points, the Canucks sitting at 30. And going into the break, they were 6-1-3, so they were managing points in 9 of 10 games. Felt pretty good about how they were playing, right? And obviously, this has affected them greatly with the players that they've got in protocol. But you talk about a team that's going to lose momentum going into the break. It's going to be the Anaheim Ducks, because not many expected them to be sitting where they are right now.
No, and they're good. I like the Ducks. They've got a cool power play. They've got a lot of good young players. Ryan Getzlaff's rejuvenated on that line with Troy Terry. You know, not an easy opponent for the Canucks, but also we're not exactly sure what their lineup will look like, depending on who tests out and who doesn't. You know, they don't have their goalie, so a good opportunity for Vancouver to get started on the post-COVID break stretch, you know, sort of finding their game where they left it off. Hey, want to quickly touch on two things before we go to Arm. Taxi squads reimposed until the All-Star break as the NHL looks to figure out some way, any way, of getting through this season in an Omicron era, excuse me. Taxi squads are a disaster for young players across the board. So I'll be curious to see exactly how they use it. You know, I think it'll be helpful to use, for example, when you're crossing the border and your American League affiliate team is not, but have to be really careful with players gathering mothballs the way that Mike DiPietro and Jack Rathbone and, you know, go on down the list. Anyone who spent any time on a taxi squad was poorly served for it, for the experience a year ago. And now it's back in the NHL for another couple of months. And then another item, the World Juniors look like they're getting canceled, unfortunately. But Dmitry Zlodoyev, the Vancouver prospect, had a goal, showed some of what he could do. I thought showed some of what he couldn't do, too. I'm really concerned about the skating. I wasn't particularly impressed from what I saw in his two games. But an interesting tournament. I thought there were some good hockey played, even if we never got to see Canada play like a real power, a powerhouse, unfortunately. And obviously didn't see a ton of Canucks prospects, which shines a light, too, on the work that Jim Rutherford and his new assistant general manager, Derek Clancy, have to do in terms of restocking this club's pipeline.
Yeah, and from a taxi squad perspective, I think he had to go through it to realize how bad it was. And Bruce Boudreau has said he's not looking to fill out an entire taxi squad, that maybe get a couple of players up here to just help supplement in certain areas, but the Canucks are relatively healthy in getting guys back. So I'm not sure he sees a huge need for it. Daryl Sutter talked about it being a pain a year ago, so I don't think they're going to be going down the road of having a complete full taxi squad available to them, just maybe a couple of guys here and there depending on the position, but don't expect to see a big influx on their way to Vancouver anytime soon. Time for a quick break. When we come back, the boy genius Harmon Dahl will join us on the VanCast.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Boy, this is a pleasure for me, guys. I get to intro my first guest as a co-host of the VanCast, and that happens to be the boy genius, Harmon Dahl. So I know that after the next 25 minutes or so, I'm going to be a lot smarter than when I got on this call when I'm just dealing with Drancer, right? So, Harm, thanks for joining us. I'm looking forward to talking to you in this capacity, my friend.
I'm really excited for it as well. I always feel like the three of us, especially last season, had a lot of time chatting in the press box, and it was always amazing talk about the team. I genuinely feel like our conversations in the press box were the only thing that helped get me through that season without fans of the building and with the team being out of it so early. So glad to have one of these conversations over the air now.
Well, because normally the fans are all clamoring for Harm and they're asking for pictures and autographs, and Drancer and I are just kind of looking at each other, navel gazing. but listen, let's start with what we've seen from the last six games. I mean, what's jumped out at you off the page? What's jumped out at you from a data perspective, looking at this team and what you've seen from the last six games, that makes you believe it's just a bump or this is a lot more than a bump?
Yeah, I think if you're looking at trying to pick out an area where there has been a noticeable sort of jump and improvement, it's definitely been the sort of offensive side, and specifically being able to generate a lot more quality. And really what I think the most profound difference that I've noticed at 5-on-5 is they're finding ways to create the quick strike element of their offense again, and that matters a lot. And what I mean by quick strike is either off the rush on the counterattack or by forcing turnovers on the forecheck. And that's really important because in the modern NHL, defenses are just so good at taking away the middle of the ice, plugging away, passing seams. So you almost have to attack the defenses before they're set. Otherwise, they're just going to keep shots to the perimeter. And that's where, when I look at, you know, the first 25 games under Travis Green, the Canucks were obviously playing a more conservative style. For starters, they were never really a team that under Green created a lot off the rush. And so that, you know, that's automatically one area where they didn't have that quick strike element. The other one was obviously they went away from that aggressive forecheck. And so I think what you noticed was there weren't enough opportunities for the Canucks to catch defenses off guard. And what would happen is the Canucks might have had a decent amount of offensive zone time, but their offensive strategy was essentially limited to funneling pucks back to the point and taking a lot of inefficient point shots. Whereas now with Boudreau coming in, obviously he's wanted to open things up. He's wanted to increase the pace, the aggressiveness. And they've obviously made that adjustment pretty successfully so far. When I look at, for instance, all three of Brock Besser's 5-on-5 goals began with his line forcing a turnover or creating havoc down low, right? And that sort of creates a circumstance where in all three of his 5-on-5 goals, Besser's had time and space in the slot to shoot. And the only way a player like Brock Besser is ever going to get that time and space is if you create some sort of havoc. And in the case of the forecheck, what that does is, you know, the opponents are sort of in a position where they're trying to support the puck on the breakout. And then all of a sudden, Tanner Pearson, JT Miller comes in and they're able to strip a puck. It's too late for the defense to be able to recover. Best is already in the slot. And so that's just the types of scoring chances that they're able to create. And the big one that I'm going to be curious to see whether it lasts or not is they're creating a lot more off the rush as well. We saw some of Mike Kelly's numbers in terms of the neutral zone regroups. And I think Quinn Hughes and Talon Myers have done a fantastic job from the back end of helping push the pace up the ice. But I think the biggest difference has been at 5-on-5 anyway, the quality of the offensive chances that they're generating.
Harmon, do the numbers, does the data, does it look sustainable to you?
I think there's definitely been an improvement at, when you look at 5-on-5, the shot attempt numbers are more or less the same across the board as they were with Green. The big difference is, so far, I think they're around a 51% XG, which is good. I think if you look at the last, sort of six games under Boudreau, it pegs them around, I think it was last I checked, 11th among NHL teams. So there has been a decent bump. Now, the thing to obviously keep in mind throughout this is Thatcher Demko has been unbelievable, and I'm sure you can count his strong performance as a constant throughout the season, but I'm not sure if he's going to obviously bail you, be as sort of dominant as he has been, right? He was the NHL's first star of the week. I don't know if he's going to be the NHL's first star of the week every week from here on out. And I think that's sort of been huge for their sort of style that they're playing right now, where they have been trading chances, right? That's been the whole point of what Boudreau's been trying to implement is, okay, they're going to be more aggressive. They're going to try and create more quality. So they are allowing a little bit more at 5-on-5. And that's where I think for now, we'll see how much they can sort of keep the defensive fort down. So far, it's been able to work out. But what I did sort of do was look at a lot of the 5-on-5 sort of rush chances for and against, just kind of manually tracking it. And I think this is something that Bruce Boudreau has sort of been preaching as well, where they don't want the quality of their game to slip, because I look at the first two or three games against, for instance, LA and Boston, and the Canucks were really dominating the for and against differential with the rush chances. And when you look at more recent games like the Winnipeg one, the San Jose one, they won those games, obviously, but the differential is sort of becoming a lot closer. So I think ultimately for this team, though, in terms of what needs to sort of continue happening for this to be sustainable, is actually special teams. And that's where my biggest question mark still comes around to the penalty kill. It's obviously looked a lot better, yep. and I think the numbers across the board have bared that out. But can they still continue to generate league average PK results despite lacking signature high-end penalty killers? And so that's that's one element where I honestly don't know. Whereas I think with the 5-on-5, they're at least showing more sustainable signs of having good form.
With the streak they were on getting interrupted quite rudely by the Omicron variant and the NHL's pandemic shutdown, What were they working on in practice? What was the sort of focus that you could witness at Rogers Arena over the course of the past week since Christmas?
I think the biggest focus was just getting back into the groove and into the rhythm, right? Because their first practice back on the 26th, they looked pretty rusty. And I think that was sort of to be expected. And Boudreaux definitely didn't seem pleased by that. But he basically said it out loud that he was kind of giving them a pass for not having played in a while. But you could tell that he wasn't really happy with how sloppy their passing was, puck carrying, just the sorts of hands-related skills and details that sort of go first when you've had sort of a layoff. And so I think a lot of the drills that they worked on, whether it was working on the breakout or some of the rush drills, it was a sort of emphasis on let's find our pace again, let's be clean with our passes. And, you know, Boudreaux took the opportunity a couple times to even sort of clarify systems things. For instance, in a lot of the breakout drills, he even pointed out things with, okay, this is what I want this exact forecheck to do. This is his role. And I think there was some systems tweaking there, a lot of work, even in terms of when they ran some offensive zone drills, a lot more emphasis on making plays down low as opposed to always funneling pucks up high. What I found really interesting after the practice on the 26th was they ran sort of the last 15, 20 minutes were almost skills work entirely, where, and it was almost sort of you would pick what you wanted to do, where, for instance, Brad Shaw was running a drill for the defenseman where they sort of set up three or four cones, each maybe 2 or 3 feet apart. And the emphasis was on making tight turns and making short passes. There'd be a guy on the side sort of feeding the player going through the drill passes as he was making, weaving in and out of the cones. And so that emphasis seemed to be on, let's make a lot of these quick turns, a lot of the sorts of things you'd expect on defensive zone retrievals. And whereas other guys, Pedersen and company, are working on 2-on-1s, Garland was setting up pucks as makeshift cones and working on his spins, other guys were working on tips. It just seemed to be the last 15, 20 minutes was interesting to me because there was such an emphasis on this is almost your freelance skill development time, which I don't know if you saw a lot of that with Green, where obviously you'd have guys working on their shots or working on their tips before, but like Brad Shaw running a skills focused drill or certain guys just being free to do what they want to work on their skills, that was pretty interesting to me. And then obviously the practice yesterday, there was an emphasis on, they made a couple power play tweaks, Pedersen at the net front, Brad Hunt on power play too, and they seemed to want to get that flow and momentum going. So I think overall, when I sort of step back and look at the last sort of practices as they've come back, the emphasis has more just been on trying to find a groove and find a rhythm again, trying to install a couple mindsets here and there in terms of how they want to play, but nothing too intense or anything of that nature.
I want to stick with that power play a bit because you've got Pedersen at the net front now, and we've talked about that before, and we've seen it in tiny, small sample sizes previously, and Boudreaux said after practice that he's just too good to not have on the first power play unit, but what did you make of him being at the net front? You know, because we know that one-timer off the right circle has always been a thing, but he just hasn't attempted enough of it, you know, this season at least. So Miller's in that spot. So what'd you make of it? And do you think we're going to see a lot of it for the next few weeks here?
Yeah, I think as Boudreaux kind of mentioned, it was more just about we need Elias Pettersson on power play one. And when you go through, you know, that was clearly the mindset as opposed to we really want him at net front. And when you sort of work the logic of, okay, if you say we want Pedersen on the first unit power play and you work through potential options, I think we can all agree long-term he's probably best suited as a flank player, but it was tough to sort of give him an opportunity on the flank, right? Because Horvat scored 2 power play goals in the last 2 games on the left flank. So he's kind of been working in that spot. And Miller's been phenomenal on that right flank. Besser scored from the bumper, and you could technically go with Pedersen there and have 3 lefties as your 3 in the middle for your 1-3-1. But that only works if you're running your plays from the left side, from a sort of handedness perspective. And obviously with Horvat on the left side, he's not going to be the power play quarterback. That's still Miller who's on the right side. So the only way to kind of get Pedersen on the first power play was to do it in the net front position. And so from there, I think I'm intrigued to see how it goes, because I think for starters, a lot of people have said, what about the physical physical toll you might take. And I'm not too worried about that, especially with the NHL sort of cracking down on cross-checking. I don't think he's going to take as much of a physical beating. But the key, I think, to really making it work is going to be finding a way to leverage Pettersson's playmaking below the goal line, right? I think the net front position for a lot of NHL power plays has evolved, where for a lot of teams, it's not just the Alex Chiasson type role where you're only looking for the tip, rebound, or tap in. I think back to the best iteration of the Canucks' power play over the last two, three years, it had Tyler Toffoli below the goal line, being able to kick out and make passes below the goal line. And Toffoli obviously wasn't a huge body who you typically associate with the net front role, but it worked because of his playmaking. And so with Miller sort of quarterbacking now on the right side, it sort of gives him a lot more options, I think, because obviously Miller himself is going to have his own one-timer threat. He's got Besser in the middle as a right shot as a one-timer threat. And now he also has Pettersson where they can go back to having that tic-tac-toe, right? Miller down to Pettersson to right shot and Besser, which is a sort of mirror of what they used to have on the left side, where Miller used to be able to feed a right shot, whether it was Toffoli or Besser, and then you'd have Horvat in the bumper. So I'm sort of interested to see how it goes. Again, I think long-term Pettersson's going to be better on the flank anyway, but I also found it interesting that Boudreaux mentioned that he sees all three of Horvat, Miller, and Pettersson as interchangeable parts on the power play. So I wonder if there's going to be any potential movement as well, and if that can be a way to add motion where, you know, when I look at the best power plays in the league, whether it's in Edmonton or whether it be Boston back in the day, there are just so many interchangeable parts where almost every guy on that power play unit can play every position. And that's a lot of times what confuses defenses. And so I'm curious if this sort of setup and Boudreaux kind of mentioning that he sees all three of those guys as interchangeable pieces, whether that can allow them to add some motion to their power play.
The other thing that jumped out at me is that you saw Hunt, you mentioned it earlier, on the second power play unit, and that tells you that he's likely going to be the guy that plays next to Tucker Poolman and not Kyle Burrows. I know that those two guys were rotating in practice yesterday. It seems like Hunt's going to get every opportunity under Boudreaux because he has a bit of shelf life with him.
Yeah, and Hunt's obviously not had a great start to this season, but again, you look at his track record and he has been a competent third pair NHL defenseman. So I think for him, this is an opportunity to kind of hit the reset button. I think with Hunt too, when he got his first opportunity to draw into the lineup against Buffalo, he started off on the wrong foot and then he had extended stretches where he just wasn't able to play. And that's always sort of tough for a player. And so with this kind of layoff and with Boudreaux, a familiar voice coming into the fold, it kind of gives them an opportunity to again, just hit the reset button. And I think that's really important because when you look at Vancouver's sort of third pair, I think a lot of the shine has started to wear off on Kyle Burrows, I think personally. Obviously a great story in terms of how he made the team out of camp. And I think his first handful of games looked pretty good. But ever since then, I think he just hasn't shown the level of sort of puck management and just even the overall defensive prowess to be an everyday NHL defenseman. And I do think that on ability level, over a larger sample, that Hunt can be an upgrade. Now, when it comes specifically to the power play, I'm not as certain on that, whether he's fit there. Obviously, he's got a really good shot and he's got a lot of experience manning the power play from his time with Minnesota and even going back to Vegas. But obviously, and I'm sure Transfer can agree with me on this, I tend to be a four forwards, one defenseman purist when it comes to your power plays. So having 2D on the second power play unit, I'm not the biggest fan of it. But again, I think this is just about giving Hunt a fresh slate to try and sort of establish himself in that third pair spot, which I don't think is a bad thing, because if he can establish himself there, sort of takes away question mark. And even for a guy like Jack Rathbone, who's currently down in the AHL, it sort of gives him breathing room, where now Rathbone, obviously, he's only played 32 professional games over the last year and a half or so. It gives him more freedom to just be able to log a ton of minutes in Abbotsford, and you don't have to sort of worry too much about do we need Rathbone to plug this hole in? And I think that would be, you know, crucial for his development, where you go back to a sort of environment, development environment for even Rathbone, where he sort of has to dominate in the AHL and really earn that promotion to get those NHL reps in. So I think this is an important opportunity for Hunt.
So I may not be wrong about Brad Hunt yet. Is that what you're saying, Harmon?
Yes, I do. I mean, he's barely played, right? And I mean, yeah, when he has shown, he's sort of not looked good. He's sort of lost some puck battles. But I always thought to myself, I really, and this goes more sort of to a bigger point that I've always thought of. It's really tough. It must be really tough to be a 7th, 8th D unless you're consistently playing and drawing into the lineup, because it's like, sure, you practice, but you don't really get the game reps, and then all of a sudden you're rusty and they throw you in and when they really need you. And so you don't get that sort of game-to-game flow and momentum that other guys sort of get. It's tough to sort of build that midseason form unless you're an everyday player, right? Unless you're Oscar Fantenberg, who, when an injury or healthy scratch happens, you sort of work your way into the lineup and then you start playing every day. And I just don't think that Hunt sort of had an opportunity to find that groove, find a rhythm. And I think this is that exact opportunity where, again, even when you look at his past stops in Minnesota, that's been a sort of key for him. Is he's not been a sort of 7th or 8th defenseman who's only played 10 or 20 games in a season. He's been up playing 40, 50, almost 60 games in a season. So it's definitely an opportunity for Hunt to prove you right there, Drancer.
I think about that a lot with Halak too, right? Halak is a guy who, he's Vancouver's backup, and people think, oh, he's been a backup for Tuukka Rask the last few years, but Tuukka Rask always had this really closely managed workload, and really when you look at Yaroslav Halak's career, he's really been a 1B, 1A guy. Like, he was never a workhorse starter, and he was never really a backup. He was like a guy who'd give you 35, right? He played 19 of the 56 games that Boston played during the shortened season a year ago, right? The year before it was like 35 games, right? Like, he's, and then he comes in now and he's cold and he sort of has these slow first periods and then locks it up the rest of the way. Like, how many of Yaroslav Halak's goals against are in the first period? It's the vast majority of them this season. And it's like, doesn't that make sense for a guy who isn't used to that always be ready, go cold, but still be ready the next moment sort of role that a backup goaltender, 6-7 defenders in? What in terms of players adjusting to that, right? Like, how do you think, and we so often exist in the quantifiable, but do you think there's something tangible to that type of shift in responsibility?
I do think so. And I think there's definitely an art to it, right? I mean, I just think about it sort of logically. And when you're cold, it's sort of, even just psychologically, every player wants to enter a flow state. And I think this is, you know, whether it's an athlete or even just for most people in even a work sense, a flow state is when you're sort of instinctual, when you're not thinking, when you're just playing off instinct and things just come second nature to you. And that's sort of always when you're playing your best, when you're enjoying even the game the most. And I think every time you come in cold, it's sort of a reset on any flow or any momentum that you had, even on a team level. I mean, talk about, you hear what the Canucks are talking about in terms of they got on this great 6-game run, and guys are talking about, you heard JT Miller talk about, well, that break just kind of, you know, it's almost a reset button for that momentum, for we've got to build that from scratch again. And so I think about it from an individual level, and, you know, every time you draw back into the lineup, it's okay, you're trying to acclimate yourself into what a game environment is like again, right? The adrenaline, the sort of fans in the building, and you're just trying to become familiar with that, with all of that again, the pace, the physicality, and you start thinking again, right? And things aren't coming second nature to you. You have to sort of build that rhythm and that flow again. And so, I mean, you hear any player talk, when they feel their best again is when they're not thinking about their game. And I feel like every time you have to sort of come in cold, whether it's as a backup goalie or whether it's as sort of a 7th or 8th defenseman that's drawing into the lineup, it's just hitting that reset button again and again and again. And so that's why I think it's an art, and it sort of takes a certain type of mental makeup for someone to really hone it down. And it's why I think teams often prefer so often a veteran in those types of roles, whether it's with backups, whether it's with your seventh or eighth D, a lot of journeyman players who are accustomed to it and sort of know what it takes to sort of prepare themselves mentally and physically to draw back in and to not really have a consistent schedule for when they're playing.
Harmon, let's change gears to the World Junior Championship, which as we record this podcast seems to be on the verge of postponement or cancellation with two games forfeited on Wednesday. But from what you've seen before Russia forfeited their game against Slovakia on Wednesday, from what you've seen, there's one Canucks prospect at the tournament. It's Dmitrij Ledoyev. He was a late round pick in 2020. What have you seen from him? What have you liked about his game? Are there any red flags for you?
Yeah, I think in terms of red flags, and I know we kind of talked about it, it's the skating for starters definitely needs to, I think that's the biggest area for him to improve. I think when I look at Slodeyev, in terms of what he does well, it's a lot of the sort of work rate element, how he's able to hound pucks, the sort of two-way intelligence, I think, sort of stands out. I mean, I've sort of seen him here and there, some of his work a while back in the MHL and a little in the VHL, and even in that action, what would stand out is things like how he stays above the puck, how smart he is positionally, and so those are sort of the calling cards for him is sort of a lot of the traits that you'd sort of expect from a typical bottom six centerman, right? The ability to be reliable defensively, to have the courage to play on the inside, and I think with Slodeyev, the biggest challenge, and I think we're sort of seeing that from even the World Juniors perspective in terms of both the positives and negatives, I think the biggest thing for him to develop as a prospect and sort of take the next step is going to be he's first of all not even the biggest guy, and so if he's not the biggest guy, then he at least needs to sort of figure out a way to really, again, work on that foot speed, because he's going to need one or the other to really sort of hold down that type of defensive checking role at an NHL level, and be, for instance, develop into, say, even a penalty killing specialist type of role long term. So admittedly, I think I didn't catch the second game of his, but I think so far with Slodeyev, and even going back to his longer track record, I think this is ultimately a player who he has, I think, a higher sort of floor when I look at prospects that are sort of drafted in the sixth round, where he's already shown in Russia that he's able to sort of play in the VHL, and he's I believe gotten spot duty even in the KHL. So he's progressed quicker, just in terms of climbing up the professional ranks, but the upside is also lower. So he's sort of, if he's going to make it, it's going to be as a sort of fourth line center type guy. And that's where, again, he really needs to work on, I think, fixing his stride and sort of improving the pace at which he plays, because I like his hockey brain. And that's really what I like, in addition to sort of his work rate and how he closes on pucks. And even on the one goal that he scored, that was the element that we saw, right? The stick to it nature, where he takes the first shot, and then he's able to corral the second one, go and sort of drive the net for the wraparound. So I think that's sort of what I've noticed with Slodeyev so far. A lot of, you know, sort of what we even saw in Russia from him.
Yeah, the awareness is there. That stride definitely needs some work, though.
Hey, Harm, thanks so much for doing this. I really enjoyed catching up with you, and I look forward to getting the three of us together again in the press box at some point next week with 50% capacity, so just half the number of people asking you for autographs.
Honestly, though, it's Drancer these days that's getting asked for the autographs, but yeah, definitely looking forward to seeing you guys back in the press box.
Thanks, Harm.
Happy New Year, bud.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Welcome back to the show. Drancer, great stuff by Harm as always. And as we look ahead to these games, these next two games, what's the one thing you want to see You know, and I'm not talking about players scoring, specific players scoring or producing. I'm just talking about, you know, stylistically, systems-wise, what's the one thing you're looking for in terms of what maybe Boudreau tried to implement beforehand and what we need to see now in terms of what his teams generally do?
Yeah, I think I just want to see the continued vertical, like the north-south attacking game. I want to see them continue to generate those chances, not even necessarily generate those goals. I think if they can continue to generate those chances, they're going to give themselves a fighting shot over the balance of the season, because they've got enough finishers. They've got enough talent that they can make those chances count. Now, I think at some point too, you're going to see some more goals go in. Like, you're going to see the Canucks get punished as the quality of their opponent ratchets up, as the schedule gets a little bit more tricky and perhaps dense too, as we sort of work through, you know, the cost of the games that were postponed here over the course of the past 10 days. But you know, I want to see if they can continue to generate those chances. You know, that'll be a material difference. And I think that leaves them in a good spot. Like, it leaves them with a puncher's chance game in, game out, because of the way that their skill plays. The last thing I want to see is I want to see them sustain a league average penalty killing rate. They've done so to this point under Scott Walker, but they haven't had a ton of time shorthanded. I want to see if that lasts. I want to see if the down ice pressure tactic continues to work, or if at some point it gets exposed a little bit off the rush. I still don't know that this team has the personnel required to be a particularly adept defensive team or penalty killing team. And to this point in the season, you know, the 5-on-5 defensive issues, they haven't really paid a price for it, partly because their defense was really good when they were generating nothing, because they were just playing boring lockdown hockey. And now they're giving up more chances, but Thatcher Demko's on fuego. I don't think you're going to see the Canucks be an elite goal prevention team 5-on-5 over the balance of the season. So can they outscore those issues as they sort of come back to earth a little bit defensively 5-on-5? And similarly on the PK, you know, can their new down ice pressure system continue to prevent the sort of cataclysm that we saw from the Canucks shorthanded in the first 2 months of the campaign?
We talked earlier about whether or not the break was good for this team and you know, losing momentum versus getting a chance to learn some of the systems and practice and all of that. I have to believe that this break is just what the doctor ordered for Elias Pettersson. That if there's a player who can come out of the break that needed a break going in and can come out of this a potentially different player, it's him. And he's spending extra time after practice. He and Nils Höglander were working on some additional things the last couple of days at the end. A guy that knows he needs to be better, a guy that's had a chance to now process what the first half has looked like, get away from it for a bit. You have to believe this is going to help him, don't you?
One would hope. I'm also curious to see him at the net front on the power play. I think he'll do well there. And I liked Bruce Boudreau suggesting that Horvat, Miller, and Pettersson are interchangeable, because how many times have I ranted about that, Farhan?
Yeah, to just make it fluid, have guys move around and start a power play in one spot and finish it in another spot. Yeah, for sure you have.
Yeah, I was patting myself on the back. So no, I'm curious. I'm curious to see it, and I'm curious to like really dive back into it. Like, I've really been enjoying my holiday. I've really been, you know, like, I haven't seen my wife's family in a long, long time. We haven't had an opportunity or occasion to get out here. You know, there's a new baby. It's been just a lovely time. And I'm really excited to get back into, like, I'm excited to get back home. I'm excited to get back to work, back to the grindstone in the way and at the rate to which the VIPs are a little bit more, you know, used to where it comes to me and my work product. And, you know, I think there's going to be some good stories to tell. And Pettersson and how he fares over the second half, like, for me, that's probably the biggest line item, evaluating that. And then, obviously, we're going to see some changes. We're going to see additional additions to the Canucks front office. We're going to see Rutherford flesh out his front office structure. We're going to see him navigate a trade deadline. We're going to see how this season looks and whether it can play out and whether it can be relatively fair despite all of the difficulty of playing right now. And you know, I think too, we're going to get to cover a team and a fan base that finally has some sense of hope, some sense of actual direction again. And I think regardless of how the Canucks fare on this road trip, you know, the fact that we're joking about them sweeping it, not losing a game in a month, like, all of that stuff. It doesn't actually matter if they play at a 95-point pace or play at a 90-point pace or play at an 85-point pace over the balance of the season from this point going forward. Like, what matters is that this fan base is interested again, just because there's some sense of confidence in club leadership. And it's been so long since that was the case. And 2021 was such an unmitigatedly dark year for the franchise. We go into 2022 with a fair bit of hope and, yes, a fair bit of complication. And I'm just excited to get back to covering this team and trying to get fans as close to it as we can, despite the fact that we're not going to have face-to-face interaction and there's going to be restrictions reintroduced. But I'm excited to get, you know, to go back to sort of doing the work a little bit more normally, as opposed to covering like one disaster after another, which is what the last year of work has too often felt like covering this club.
Yeah, no question about it. 2022 promises to be great. I can't believe it. This is our last VanCast for 2021.
I know. And
you know what else you're going to be looking forward to? You're going to be looking forward to hearing the odd bark on the VanCast like we hear with Wallace.
Oh, you're getting end. A dog.
What We've got dog? A dog. We got a dog 2 days ago. I gave what? In after
How
all these years.
How have you not texted me a photo?
It's on social, but I've sent you a come on, we've had this conversation.
Yeah, we had the conversation. I didn't realize you'd already pulled the trigger. What's his name?
Oh, yeah, Luna. Her name, Luna.
Luna?
Yeah.
Buddy. What type of dog?
It is a yellow lab. My kids have been up a lot the last two nights, making sure it goes for a walk and comes back. I've been able to wash my hands of it for now.
Yeah.
So, you know, I won't be able to permanently, but, you know, this has clearly been a me giving in, so y'all deal with it until I go down every day for a little bit of time, and I cuddle and I hug and I do all of that stuff, but I'm not there training it. I'm letting the kids do that.
But, well, I mean, let the kids do that, but oversee it well. Like, at the end of the day, the work you put in now will pay off in a major way when your dog is a delight.
You know what? My wife, my sister-in-law's here. They do all of that. They grew up with dogs. They know what they're doing. If I did it, I would just screw the dog up. So, you know.
Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait to meet Luna.
The dog needs to train me more than the other way around.
We're definitely doing a VanCast puppy date at some point.
Absolutely. Hey, listen, we should let everybody know that Mike Rupp from the NHL Network joins Sean Gentile and Craig Custance from the Athletic Hockey Show to get you set for the 2022 Winter Classic in Minnesota. Rob Pizzo from CBC Sports and Jesse Granger and Sarah Sivian from the Athletic NHL count down the biggest stories in the NHL from 2021 on the Athletic Hockey Show. Meanwhile, we'd like to thank all of you for listening throughout the season, especially here in 2021, as Drancer mentioned. Been some dark times. Hopefully, we've been able to give you some enjoyment throughout all of it here on the VanCast. Please follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Don't forget to leave a rating and a review. Right now, get annual subscriptions to The Athletic for just $24 a year when you visit theathletic.com/VanCast. And the VanCast returns next week, next year, with two episodes beginning Monday, January 3rd. Happy New Year, everyone.